Good morning. You're listening to The Beacon. Brian.
Merry Christmas Eve, Eve.
Yeah. It means it's the eve of Christmas Eve.
Oh.
You know what? It's got to be a mom of young child thing.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we're like, we've been counting down the Christmas Eves, 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 Eves for like the last week. So we're very excited that it's Christmas Eve, Eve today. Clearly, you share my enthusiasm. It's like exhilarating across the table.
So do you do that? Do you do that thing where you open one present on Christmas Eve?
You know, I did as a kid. I don't really do that with my kids though. I don't know why. I don't know why I don't. We're gonna do this. So this year on Christmas Eve, it's gonna be me and my kids. And I went super dorky mom and bought us all matching pajamas. So we're gonna do matching jammies, make Santa cookies, watch a Christmas movie of some sort, and make dinner at home. And it'll be really nice. It'll be really nice. I'm really excited about it. This is our first year in my new home. And I think I shared on the air before that we moved in August.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a fireplace.
Right.
And the first thing my son said in August, my five-year-old, was, I'm so happy we have a fireplace because now Santa can come in the house the right way. So he's been psyched about this for like 4 months now.
So how has he been thinking he's been coming in through the front door?
We didn't quite get into the logistics of how Santa's been entering the house, but probably, I would imagine. I'm sure I fed him some line somewhere about how Santa gets in when there's no fireplace. But
he was probably worried, is Santa going to be able to get in?
Yeah.
And I guess is there any time left to do any shopping still?
Oh, sure. Are you kidding me? The stores are open until, like, I don't know. I mean, Christmas Eve. I do most of my shopping online because I can't stand Christmas shopping in stores. In fact, I have a very unzen-like story to tell. I'm not proud of my behavior.
What's that?
Well, I was in Target the other day, and my kids, first of all, were making me, they were like maddening, like asking me every other thing we passed. Mommy, can you get this for me? Mommy, can you get this for me? After I explicitly gave them a long lecture about don't ask me for anything when we go into Target today. So I was not in a happy place to begin with. And then I was checking out and I got in line and I saw this gentleman kind of go into the line next to mine and then saw that our line was shorter. So he kind of tried to sneak into our line and I just sort of stayed put where I was, which was kind of a break in the line to let people go through, like people who were walking through the, you know, through the aisle area. So I kind of stayed put, but I saw him go into one line, our line shorter, and then kind of sneak in, like stealthily sneak in.
Right.
So I just stood there, like I was holding my place in line. And then he says to me, "Are you in line here?" And I said, "Yeah, I am." And he said, "Oh, so just so you know, I'm in line here. I've been in line here. I was just here because I was letting carts go back, you know, go between us."
Right.
And I was just like, I didn't say anything to him. I actually stormed away and went into the line that he was going to go into. And I don't like being like that. I mean, I like to be like very zen about things. And it's Christmas. And I would have loved to have been like, "Of course, please, by all means, go ahead." But I'm like, dude, you picked a wrong time to mess with me because my kids have already made me crazy. And you did not get in this line. You saw that this line was shorter. So long story short, I stormed out of my line. I went into the line he was originally going to go in, and guess who won?
You did.
I did. I totally won. So revenge was mine, which not a good look on me.
Yeah, but something similar happened to me, and somebody was trying to straddle two lines.
No.
And I walked up and I said, "Hey, you got to pick a line. You got to figure out which one you're going to go into, that one or that one."
Good for you. Way to stand up for the cause.
And they looked at me, and then they chose a line, and I went into the other one.
Did you beat them?
I don't remember.
Oh.
I was so happy that I was proactive about making them choose a line.
That's really impressive. That is very impressive.
But people do that all the time.
I know.
And so, you know, it was the effect of having it happen so many times, finally having had enough.
You're just done. Yeah. I am not tolerating, like, line bouncers anymore. Pick a line and stick with it.
Are you a line bouncer?
I don't know. I just made it up. It seemed appropriate,
though. Yeah, it is. Well, you know, one way to avoid line bouncers, if you still need to shop, you can do so by shopping through Amazon Smile. It's a simple and automatic way for you to support the Chicago Lighthouse every time you shop on Amazon at no cost to you. And you'll find the exact same low prices, the vast selection that they have, and they do have a vast selection, and convenient shopping experience. So no line jumpers at Amazon.com. And there's the added bonus that 0.5% of the purchase price will be donated to the Chicago Lighthouse. So just go to chicagolighthouse.org/AmazonSmile/, and there's a link at the bottom of the page, and that'll set you up so you can go through the correct portal. And then, you know, for the rest of the year, you can go ahead and bookmark that page in your browser for quick access in the future. So if you're buying, I guess what would be next after Christmas would be Valentine's Day gifts, birthday gifts, all those things.
Any occasion, really. Mm-hmm. A lighthouse clock would be a perfect gift for any occasion.
And designer clocks, and they've got some wonderful ones.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, I wonder if they still, like, if they order today, if they could do overnight shipping and still get it Christmas Eve. If you wanted
Well, I'm sure, yeah, there's something that you could do in order to get it in time. But if not, still, it's a thought that counts. And sometimes people like the added anticipation, I know I do, of having something coming on the way that you can look forward to.
I hear that. Stretch it out as long as possible. Mm-hmm. Keep the gifts coming, friends.
And we've got gifts of our own sort.
Ooh, look at you, king of segues.
In the way of interviews.
That's right.
Yeah, informational
interviews. We have a show packed full of presents for you, our listeners.
Mm-hmm. And we'll start off with Kurt Decker. He's a lawyer for the National Disability Rights Network, and he'll bring us up to date on H.R. 4547. That's a House bill that aims to protect people with disabilities who are receiving Social Security against fraud. And, you know, that's got to be the worst thing. People who are disabled have to deal with folks trying to defraud their Social Security benefits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then we're talking to Maxwell Rice, who's a candidate for Illinois 9th Congressional District. He'll talk about his candidacy and how he plans to address issues affecting people with disabilities. So two really good interviews today.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like it.
Yes. And then, of course, our cast of thousands.
Or four.
Sandy Murillo and Brett Shishkoff will be along with Luke and Juan. And we will jump off and get this thing rolling. And, of course, we have a very special awe factor today.
Mm, in honor of Hanukkah.
Mm-hmm.
And I take it a different direction. So we will be back right after this. You're listening to The Beacon. Saturday morning on WCPT 820 AM.
This is Coach Mike Ditka. I'm asking you to support my friends at the Chicago Lighthouse, who are providing critical educational services to children who are blind, visually impaired, or multi-disabled. Through its innovative preschool, Birth to Three, and other cutting-edge programs, the Lighthouse is making a big difference in the lives of these children.
This is Dr. Janet Slick, President and CEO of the Chicago Lighthouse. These are exciting times here at the Chicago Lighthouse. The Chicago Lighthouse provides a community of comprehensive care for people who are blind, visually impaired, disabled, and veterans. To find out how you can help, call 312-997-3675 or visit us at chicagolighthouse.org.
I'm Akash Patel. Democrats have held the 9th Congressional District seat in Illinois for a long time. But can Republicans score an upset? Joining us now, Max Rice. He is the Republican congressional candidate for Illinois' 9th Congressional District, and he's also a former energy executive. Max, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Akash.
You are running for Illinois' 9th Congressional District. What motivated you to decide to run?
Because I think it's wrong to... I've been talking negative things about Jan Schakowsky for years, at least a decade. And I think it's wrong to talk and not doing something about it. And I'm 26 years old, and this was the first moment that I could. So it's more of a moral issue to me than let's get power, let's make money, let's try to sell some books. This is just completely a moral issue.
Would you like to tell us a little more about your professional background, where you went
Absolutely.
To high school?
I'm not sure if I would use the word executive, maybe more of a manager.
Manager, okay.
Managerial level. Okay. But yeah, went to New Trier High School. And at New Trier was great because it's a big school and had an opportunity to do, I did a little of a lot. Mm-hmm. Everything from volunteering across the street at the ICRE, Illinois Center for Rehabilitation and Education, to debate, to football, to swimming, to water polo, to improv, to I was class president in 2010. And so there's a lot you could say about New Trier. A lot of people say negative things, but the best part was the amount of opportunities. And then from New Trier, went to University of Texas, Austin. And people always ask me where I went to school. I went there. I didn't complete school there because I got it. You need to declare a major after 2 years.
Sure.
I got into the School of Undergraduate Studies. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I kind of felt like I squeezed the juice of what I could do. And I wanted to do film. And so I went to Columbia College Film School there. Squeezed the juice there. Kind of had a few years where I was doing a lot of video production and marketing, like those type of things. And went full circle back into the family business, which is energy. We run an energy consulting firm called Energy Connection. Energy brokerage firm. We work with thousands of small businesses, helping them save money, make smart decisions, avoid making mistakes, which there's a lot of fraud and abuse in the energy sector.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's the journey from here until now. A lot of politics in between, too.
Sure.
Yeah, and startups, and yeah, a lot of failures, a few successes, but...
Let's discuss the key issues that you will have to deal with in the Congress. First off, tax
yes.
reform. The House passed their version of the tax reform bill and the week before Thanksgiving, and then the Senate passed their version. Would you have supported either the House or Senate version?
I can't support any bill longer than the U.S. Constitution. So that's the simple answer. And the long answer is it's just an unfortunate situation because we needed to pass, like, something. And I think what was passed is going to be the Republican equivalent of Obamacare, where it's going to come back to haunt them later on, where it's like they wanted something pure, but they came up with a compromise that kind of is the worst of all worlds. So
can you go a little deep on where you stand on repealing the individual mandate?
Well, to me, it's a constitutional issue. You should never be forced to buy a product from a private company. And so I know so many people that, like, had a job and they lost a job, and they couldn't afford to buy health insurance, but they couldn't afford to pay the fine. Mm-hmm. So I think the individual mandate, like, I get the intention they want to make healthcare cheaper, but it hasn't accomplished that. And I think it's wrong to penalize people for being broke.
One of the concerns in House Republicans from high-tax states like ours, one of the concerns that they had when drafting this bill, including moderate Republicans from high-tax states like Illinois, had concerns over the elimination of the state and local tax deductible. Do you share their concerns over that?
Yes, and I kind of understand why they eliminated that, because a lot of states that benefit are blue states. And so it was easy for them to put that in there. But just overall, I think we're not really addressing the fundamental problems that people are upset about.
Would you have struck a deal on this where you tell them, hey, if I get this incorporated into the bill, if I get a commitment from you to allow this amendment to be adopted in the bill, I will vote for it?
On principle, no.
Okay.
And that's why the bill is 400 pages long. Is because there is a lot. If you include this, I'll vote for it, and we'll find out what the bill actually looks like. I'll be honest. I've read the recaps, but I haven't read all 400 pages.
Democrats argue that this is just a tax cut to the wealthy and not the middle class. What is your response to this?
I think there's some truth. They're not entirely correct. Obviously, they're being political, but there is a kernel of truth to that, and I think that's the problem with the modern Republican Party. Is they're focusing too much on rich people issues. Like kind of like the New York Republicans, like the Fox News people of the world, where their biggest concern is they want to reduce entitlements, and they want to get rid of the death tax, which I'm for getting rid of the death tax, but that's not what people really care about.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a kernel of truth, but I don't think this tax plan is really gonna make too many people, like, I don't think anyone's taxes are going up, but yeah, billionaires will be making a lot of money off this tax plan.
You had Congresswoman Schakowsky argue against the bill for a long time, and for the same argument that I just laid out.
Yeah.
I mean, is that a mistake?
She's just trying to raise money and feed her base. I don't know where she gets her numbers from. She keeps saying that 40 million people's taxes are going to raise. I don't know where that figure comes from, but I don't think it's a mistake. She's just trying to feed her base. I think it's a mistake. If you really care about what Congress is supposed to do and how it's supposed to function, it's a mistake, because she's alienating people and getting people riled up for the wrong reasons, for political reasons.
I want to shift to the issue of health care, if we can. Republicans have been fighting for 7 years, have been running on this idea to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. And they've had 7 years to do that, and yet they have failed to come up with a plan. What would you like to replace the Affordable Care Act with?
I wish they were spending those 7 years coming up with a plan. And, we could talk personally about how, like, I'm on Obamacare, and I'm under $40,000 a year. I think it's $45,000 a year is the cutoff, so I'm paying $46 a month. And healthcare is not too useful. It's nice that I'm only paying $46 a month, but my biggest concern is I'm kind of at the border, and if I go above that number, if I make $45,000 and $1 a month, I owe the government thousands of dollars, and I think that's wrong. I think the purpose of healthcare is to, if we have any extra money, is to help people that need it. I think we need to focus on preventative healthcare. I think we need to do more to offer free, you know, anything from breast cancer screenings to any AIDS tests, any kind of preventative healthcare. The government needs to up that sort of funding. And I think we're having the wrong debate. We're talking too much about health insurance. Like, that's not the problem. Healthcare is the problem, and people getting sick, that's the problem. Not like health insurance. I this might be controversial, but I don't think health insurance companies need to exist. And so I think we need to shift the bait to healthcare and not onto health insurance reform.
Well, let me press you on that, because that does sound like a very controversial thing
it does. It doesn't sound too Republican either. But.
Yeah, but why do you believe insurance companies shouldn't even exist? I mean,
they don't have to exist. I don't think they have to exist. Like, I think it's fine that they do exist, but I think it's just a really fraudulent industry. And if you look at their the stock prices after Obamacare came into effect, they all doubled and tripled in price. So they're winning. And I think the problem is there's a lot of fraud in that. It's like the health insurance companies are robbing the hospitals, who are robbing the government, and we're at the end of the road having to pay the tab. Like, it shouldn't be, the real problem is it shouldn't be $300 for a Band-Aid or $3,000 for an ambulance rides. Or, I went to the doctor before I enrolled, and it was an emergency urgent care clinic. And I just had, like, a flu-type symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And my first question was, like, how much money is this going to cost? And they laughed at me. And I'm like, well, I don't know. It depends what you have. I'm like, I get a range of what that costs. But they're like, no, we don't have any form like that. I'm like, what if I, can you just at least give me a cost of, like, certain tests? Like, if you take my fever or if the strep throat test, anything. They're like, no, we don't have any prices. So I walked out. And if I had a serious illness, which I hope I don't, I would have to pay so much more by not catching it early. And one proposal that I saw was to do exactly that and have hospitals and doctors let you know how much things cost.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think Jan Schakowsky, Paul Ryan, the most hardcore Republicans, most hardcore Democrats agree that the problem is the cost of healthcare.
But they fail to address it.
They say it. They fail to actually specifically address it.
Why should voters elect you to Congress and not Congresswoman Schakowsky?
Because you don't need to give me $10,000 to get a bill through, and that we're going to bring Congress back to what it was originally supposed to be, which is an office for you, not for the people. Jan Schakowsky has five offices, and the intent of those five offices are to get her elected and to make her look good. If I'm in Congress, the office and all my staff is going to be working for you. and I have my own personal ideas, but your ideas will always come before me. We're going to crack down on corruption, which can't be done if anyone else is elected. And so you don't have to vote for me, but I do think that I know that you'll benefit more by voting for me, no matter what you believe in.
All right, we'll leave it there.
Yeah.
Max Rice is the Republican candidate for Illinois' 9th Congressional District. Max, thanks so much for coming in, and please come back and we can talk about this.
Absolutely.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Yeah, I have an undergrad from DePaul Computer Information Systems and a master's in Business Information Technology. And I know I have a disability, and it can be challenging trying to get a position. You know, they want to hire someone with a disability. So that was one of the challenges I had also. Going to a job interview and people look at you strange because you have a disability. I've gotten frowned at. They'll say, we'll call you or we'll consider, but it never happened. The Lighthouse has provided me with employment. I've been here since 2013, November. I've grown. I transitioned from Illinois Tollway to UI Health. The Lighthouse is awesome. They really work with people with disability, visually impaired, and veterans, get employment, you know, find employment, because the percentage of people with disability is unemployed is extremely high. People that have degrees and they still can't find a job. So the Lighthouse is very supportive in helping them find employment. One word, I say awesome.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
Welcome back, folks, to The Beacon here on WCPT 820 AM. And Lainey, I just wanted to ask, what are you expecting for Christmas, if anything?
Ooh, you know what? Technology is such a funny thing. So I made an Amazon wish list of things that I would like for Christmas, and then I send the wish list to my mom. And you can go onto your wish list and, like, check and see if somebody bought the item. So I know what I'm getting for Christmas on Amazon.
Amazon. Okay.
Amazon. So you can put like a little wish list together and then send the wish list off to your, you know, people. And then you can go back and check on the items to see if they've been bought yet or not. So I know everything that I'm getting for Christmas. I don't know if I know everything, but I know some of the things I'm getting for Christmas from my mom. And one of the things I'm very excited about is an espresso machine. I'm super psyched.
You drink espresso?
I drink lattes.
Oh,
I drink lattes. That's my big drink. But they're like $6 a piece at Starbucks because I get soy milk or almond milk, and that's an added blah, blah, blah. So, like, it's not a cheap habit.
Right.
So this way I can make them at home, and I'm very excited about it.
All right.
How about you? Do you have any big Christmas gifts coming your way? Or that you're hoping for?
No.
No?
I'm just happy to have a day off.
Yeah.
Maybe
that's
watch a
gift.
Game or two.
There you go.
Have a hearty meal. Don't require much at this point.
That's nice. You're a very low maintenance guy.
Yes.
Are you going to be with family? You'll be with family.
Oh, of course.
Of course you are.
Yes, indeed. Sister,
nice.
Father, brother-in-law, and all those things.
Good. Do you have nieces or nephews?
Yes.
Are they young?
Some are, and some are older.
Okay.
And hopefully, speaking of which, usually there's a family Christmas party. And hopefully my invite is...
In the mail?
Forthcoming.
Christmas is like 2 days away, and you haven't received an invite to your family Christmas party?
Well...
I'm a little concerned.
Well, I have to check my devices and also check other family members, but it's usually not a problem.
Okay. You're usually welcome in,
yes,
in the door of your family Christmas parties.
Yes.
That's nice. That's very gracious of your family.
Yes. And there's lots of cooking, and as long as I bring a dish, it'll be fine.
It's good. Then you're accepted. That's your, what do you call it? tuition. I don't know what's the word I'm looking for. Anyway, do you want to introduce
fee.
Me? Yeah, entrance fee.
Well, before we go to that segment, next up, Kurt Decker. He's a lawyer for the National Disability Rights Network, and he'll bring us up to date on H.R. 4547 that aims to protect people with disabilities who are receiving Social Security against fraud. And, you know, that's got to be the worst thing. People who are disabled have to deal with folks trying to defraud their Social Security benefits.
A recent legislation has been presented in Congress that would ultimately protect Social Security recipients with disabilities from financial exploitation and abuse. We're talking about H.R. 4547. And here to talk with us about why this legislation is important is Kurt Decker, who is the CEO of the National Disability Rights Network. Kurt, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Wonderful. Well, first of all, Kurt, a lot of people, or many people with disabilities who receive Social Security, meaning SSDI, or Social Security Disability Income, or SSI, Supplemental Security Income, have the assistance from a representative payee that helps manage their benefits. Can you tell us a little bit about what a representative payee is?
Yes, I would be happy to. First of all, there are about 8 million beneficiaries of SSI and SSDI that currently have a representative payee.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a process where it's determined by Social Security that an individual who receives benefits is not capable of managing their funds the other aspects of their life that the money would be used for. And so then a representative payee is appointed to receive the check and then make sure that the individual is getting the benefits of that income. The vast majority of representative payees are family members or children and other individuals, but often there are entities, nursing homes, other kinds of facilities, that serve as a representative payee for people that reside in those facilities. Many people in mental hospitals are also recipients of representative payees. And then there's a group of people where there may not be a family member or a facility director, where Social Security would actually pay a fee to a professional organization to manage the money on behalf of a beneficiary.
Mm-hmm. And now I understand that this legislation, this is specifically targeted to people or Social Security recipients that, you know, have a representative payee helping manage their benefits. Can you tell us a little more about the actual legislation, how it would protect those recipients?
Well, with a little background and history, from the inception of this program, there's been very little oversight of this vast number of people who have a representative payee. Under the current Social Security statute, only entities that have 50 or more beneficiaries, or as I said earlier, people in mental hospitals or fee-for-service, are required to be reviewed. As a result of a terrible scandal, 6 or 7 years ago out in Iowa in a turkey farm, Social Security Administration came to my organization and asked us to participate in expanding the review of the representative payee program, trying to reach more people to try to identify particular problems. We did that for them for about 5 years, and then the Social Security Administration decided to change that contract and give it to another entity, which has frankly not been able to really keep up with the amount of work.
Sure.
So this legislation has been introduced by the Ways and Means Committee in the House of Representatives because they were very concerned that Social Security Administration really had not developed a very robust program to try to identify those places where there might be some problems in the administration of the money. Our experience, when we were running the contract, we found many, many problems. We found people who, you know, were stealing the money, others who were just not spending it appropriately. So people were not living in good situations, and the money was not benefiting them as it is intended to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was very obvious to the Congress, who has been concerned about the lack of oversight. And so this bill is an attempt to reestablish the nationwide protection and advocacy system to be involved in every state and territory that can go out and check on a number of these representative payees. It will never be able to reach everyone because, as I said, there were 8 million people, but we certainly can go after bad actors as they are discovered to try to make sure that the beneficiary is not being exploited or financially disadvantaged.
Absolutely. And how would this act potentially oversee, you know, those beneficiaries and representatives' pays? How would it, you know, protect the beneficiaries?
Right. Well, I think it's a very innovative approach to this very vast problem. Mm-hmm. First of all, the money that's identified in the bill would go out to the every protection and advocacy agency in the country, which is in all the states, the territories, and even the Native American area in the Southwest. They'd all receive a grant, which would allow them to have sufficient trained staff mm-hmm. that could conduct investigations. And then the places that would be looked at would be either assigned by Social Security based on their information about who is the representative payee. They would send these entities and individual to the P&A and say, please look at these. And then the P&A itself would be able to reach out to the larger disability community and ask for help in identifying other places that they may have noticed something going on. So, for example, if a day provider happened to see a beneficiary who wasn't clothed properly, may have disheveled, you know, wasn't wearing appropriate clothes for the season, they could call the P&A agency and say, we're worried about this person. Mm-hmm. You might want to check on whether that representative payee is actually spending the funds appropriately. So it's sort of a two-ply program, identified by Social Security through their knowledge and information, and then also some identifying out of the disability community itself where there might be problem areas. So I think it's a good approach, trying to reach the biggest number of people possible.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there might be organizations or individuals that maybe the Social Security is unaware of, or, you know, as you said, it's 8 million people with representative payees. So, you know, this twofold approach, can potentially help, you know, as many people as possible.
Yes, we've unfortunately had some pretty serious situations that have mm-hmm. come to light
sure.
you know, after the fact, after someone has been very hurt or actually died yeah. Because of the failure of any really adequate oversight. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no guarantee, even with this bill, that we'll catch every bad actor.
Yeah.
But I think this gives us an effort to really reach out to those places where there are the most serious problems.
Sure, sure. And now, how can people, you know, as I mentioned, this is still pending legislation that's in Congress. How can people with disabilities or, you know, anyone advocate for this legislation?
Well, it's very new. It only has been out for about a week. We have 9 co-sponsors already. It's very important to get a very bipartisan set of co-sponsors. Fortunately, this is a bill that has been put together by both a Republican chairman, Sam Johnson, and his minority Democratic counterpart, Congressman Larson from Connecticut. The disability community should be calling all the members in their delegation, both Democrat and Republican, and ask them to co-sponsor. If we can get a very broad cross-section of the Congress, there is a very good chance that this bill would actually be added to one of the other pieces of legislation that will move through the Congress in the next several weeks, mm-hmm. The sort of the must-pass bills like the appropriations bill or other extensions. And this bill, which, if it has broad bipartisan support, will not be controversial and will not, in fact, increase the deficit at all, and therefore has a very good chance of passing if the members here are from the disability community.
And most importantly, you know, it protects people with disabilities, as I mentioned, from exploitation, from abuse.
Absolutely. This is it's a necessary program because there are unfortunately people who aren't just capable of managing their own funds. But at the same time, these are also some of the most vulnerable people and therefore are not always in a position to reach out for help or indicate that they're not getting the value and the benefit of this money. And so it's really important that there be a third party independent monitoring system to protect those people who are the most vulnerable in the disability community.
Absolutely. And, you know, I know that your organization is, you know, advocating not just for this legislation, but for many other topics affecting the disability community. Can you briefly tell us a little more about the National Disability Rights Network?
Certainly. The National Disability Rights Network, NDRN, is the membership association of the congressionally established protection and advocacy programs. As I said earlier, they are in every state and territory, and they receive federal funds over the last 30, 40 years to provide legally based advocacy to people with disability. Mm-hmm. We're a cross-disability program, so any person with a disability could come to our agency in the state and receive advocacy services based on issues related to their disability. Any issue that is a manifestation of their disability would be able to be helped by our agency. So education cases, employment discrimination, abuse and neglect, of course, lack of vocational rehabilitation services. We are working on issues of ADA enforcement, the Fair Housing Act, IDA. And so it's a very broad, cross-disability, legally-based advocacy agency that attempts to be out there as a one-stop for anyone with a disability to come with their problems and get assistance.
Now, do you provide resources for the community, or do you just advocate in Congress? What are the services you provide?
Well, at the local level, at the affiliate level, they actually do provide. They have legal authority, mm-hmm. and lawyers and advocates on staff, so we can actually represent an individual in any type of legal case, from individual litigation to actually class actions. We have a full range of legal options available. Depending on where the client is and what the client needs, we also can solve a lot of problems short of litigation, and that's the preferred way, obviously.
Sure, obviously.
But then at the national level, NDRN, and at our level, we are on the Hill and in the administration bringing to those policymakers all of the information that we have gleaned from our members. And we are probably serving about 80,000 clients a year, and we can then take that that information and that experience and then really be, I think, very articulate advocates at the federal level to say, this is what's really happening to people with disability. This is what's wrong with this particular program. This needs to be fixed. And I think that, you know, this legislation is a good example. Well, we could come into Congress and say, based on our experience, there needs to be better oversight of the representative payee program. And we do that whether it's in special education or voc rehab or Medicaid services. And having that individual approach and knowing, you know, representing thousands of clients a year really gives us a pretty accurate picture of what's working and what's not working.
Now, where or how can people find out more, not just about HR 4547, but also about your other advocacy efforts or about the Disability Rights Network?
People can certainly check our website, which is ndrn.org. And then on that website, you can see what we're doing at the national level, but there's also an ability to find the local affiliate in your state or territory.
Sure, sure. Well, Kurt, is there anything else you would like to add?
I would just say that this is very exciting that this Congress, which certainly has problems in getting things done, has come together on a bipartisan basis to try to provide increased protections to this very vulnerable population. So if we can make this happen over the next couple of months, this would be a major step forward in the protection of people with disabilities.
Absolutely. It would be a win-win situation for everyone.
Yes, indeed.
Well, everyone, if you want to find out more about HR 4547 or about the National Disability Rights Network, you can visit their website at www.ndrn.org. Well, Kurt, thank you so much for joining us today on The Beacon, and best of luck with all of your wonderful advocacy efforts.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your giving us the time to talk about this important issue.
Great. Well, everyone, this is the Lighthouse Beacon. We'll be right back.
1 in 6 of the wounded U.S. soldiers evacuated from Iraq and Afghanistan battle zones suffered eye injuries. That's the highest rate of eye injuries since the Civil War. The National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, NLS, part of the Library of Congress, is stepping up to help. NLS works with military hospitals, rehab centers, and groups such as the Blinded Veterans Association to make sure that service members who have sacrificed so much for their country can still experience the pleasures of reading. Through the free NLS Talking Book Program, eligible veterans have access to thousands of bestsellers, biographies, westerns, self-help books, and more, and a variety of magazines. Veterans receive priority service from NLS, but any U.S. resident who is blind, has low vision, or cannot hold a book because of a physical illness or disability may sign up for the program. To learn more about what NLS can do for you or a friend or loved one, visit www.loc.gov/NLS or call 1-888-NLS-READ.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Lighthouse Beacon. I am Brett Shishkoff.
And I am Sandy Murillo. Happy holidays to everyone, first of all.
I want to wish you, Sandy, a Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Well, Merry Christmas to you too, Brett.
Do you have, like, a favorite gift or anything that you've had over the years that you just, you know, just sticks out in your mind as one of your fondest memories for Christmas?
One of my favorite memories as a child, you know, was when I believed in Santa. I remember, you know, we'd go to Christmas party with some of our family friends and our relatives, and you know, it was Christmas Eve. And so I know that for me, Brett, what I always looked forward to was to getting home, and sure enough, as soon as we got home, me and my older brother would run over to the Christmas tree, and there was all of these gifts, these toys, you know, even clothing, just different things. And, you know, that was the magic of Christmas for me, Brett, you know, being able to have that surprise.
Yeah, I'd have to say for me, one of my favorite Christmases was one of the first I can remember, which was actually, I think it was 89.
Sure.
And we got a Nintendo. And so I don't know if I was able to play with my brother, you know, Mario Brothers and like some really, really cool Nintendo games that I just remember playing for years and would occasionally connect the Nintendo back up. As the 90s went on, I'd still go back and play those games because of just the fond memories I had. You just know the love that was behind it with, like, you know, your parents and your family, your other family members really do care about you so much to get you something, and they want to see that smile on your face. And I know for me, I'm okay with, like, receiving gifts, but honestly being able to hear the happiness that, like, the gifts I give brings is actually more of what I prefer. Like,
I know.
Especially as I've gotten older, it's become more and more important to me to literally, like, how can I rock my parents and my brothers and sisters socks off with the gift I'm going to get them.
Exactly. And I think for me, that's the fun of it. Like thinking of something that, you know, what, you know, every year I'm like, I'm going to give them something that they really like, or they'll really be able to use or whatever. That's the fun of it all during this time.
I think I told you that I went and saw the new Star Wars. This, we talked about it a little bit off the air, but, anyone who is a Star Wars fan, this new one, if you haven't gone and seen it, you definitely should. It's a lot of fun, lots of action, lots of humor. They seem to be able to kind of keep you on the edge of your seat, but also putting a smile on your face. The music was done great. That classic kind of John Williams style that you're used to with most Star Wars movies. There's some surprises in there that maybe people aren't going to expect. I'm not going to give any spoilers.
Of
Don't worry,
not.
People. But yes, I definitely highly recommend it. I enjoyed my experience. I went with my all of my siblings, actually, and my sister-in-law. So we did a kind of the kids' night out. My parents actually watched the grandkids, which was basically them already sleeping because we went to a late show. We went to a 10 p.m. show. So
oh,
it was
wow,
a pretty, pretty late. And went to Studio Movie Grill, which is out in Glen Ellen, Wheaton area, and they had audio description, which was my first time going there. And it was, it worked great. Didn't have any issues. We came in, they tore our tickets, and then the manager brought the headset to me while we were seated.
Uh-huh.
And that's what Studio Movie Grill is it's sure. one of those ones where they come and serve you food.
Okay, right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so that's literally what they did. They served me my audio description headset, and it worked great. No issues, no static, nothing. It worked perfectly fine throughout it. So,
you know, that's something that I've always been curious about, Brett. Mm-hmm. Star Wars and audio description. How?
Oh, man. The audio describer for the Star Wars movies is great.
Uh-huh.
It's normally a British guy
sure.
with a very, like, gravelly kind of lower voice, and he just, when menacing situations were happening with the bad guys, you'd hear it in his voice of, like, almost him becoming that evilness in that specific part of the movie, or if there was something lighter, you could hear his voice maybe soften a little bit. He it was just a great experience. They, like, Disney themselves, like, because now Lucasfilms is actually a part of Disney.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're fabulous with the audio describers they have. Like, every single film that I've seen in the last few years, their audio describers fit perfectly with the movie that they have. Let's get on to the rest of the show. You are listening to The Beacon on WCPT 820 AM.
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
Hi, I'm Erica Borgren, Iraq veteran and director of the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs. Our mission is to empower veterans and their families to thrive. Our agency is home to a team of veterans whose sole job is to help other veterans. But we can't do this work alone. We need Illinois veterans to stand up and be counted so we can better understand and serve our veteran community. You have already stood up to answer the call to service. Now, stand up and be counted to help the entire veteran community. Visit veterans.illinois.gov.
All right, folks, The Beacon, still with you here. I'm Brian Hawkins.
I'm Lainey Kleeman.
Yes, and we are moving along at a steady pace. And this, what did you call this, the Christmas Eve?
Christmas Eve Eve. It's the eve of Christmas Eve.
All right.
See? See how that works?
It's starting to catch on.
Yep, you like it.
Uh-huh.
It's catchy.
And we thought what we'd do now is present you with a story for the holidays, something to lighten your heart, would
nice.
You say?
Yeah, I think you can say that.
Right. You know, it's interesting. One of my favorite programs of all time was Family Classics, and it was on one of the television stations here, and it's coming back. And so this story that you have kind of reminds me of that, what it felt like watching those programs. So, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, something to warm the cockles of your heart and something to hopefully make you go, aw. Lainey Kleeman with The Aw Factor.
Thank you. I haven't watched Family Classics. I'll have to check that out. Warm our hearts. Today's story is about a 102-year-old Holocaust survivor who meets his nephew for the first time. I am 100% serious when I say when I first read this story, I cried. Like, there's a video to it as well, and it is so endearing. Like, it just choked me up, and I just knew that this had to be the story of the week. There is a gentleman named Eliyahu Petrushka. He is 102 years old. He is a Holocaust survivor, and he fled Poland at the beginning of World War II and thought his entire family had perished in the Holocaust. He just learned that he, 2 weeks ago, his grandson received an email from a cousin in Canada who was working on her family tree, and she had uncovered a Yad Vashem, and Yad Vashem is a Holocaust Memorial's comprehensive online database of Holocaust victims. So she had uncovered a page of testimony filled out in 2005 by Eliyahu's younger brother, who had filled it out for his older brother, who he thought had died. So both brothers had thought the other one died in World War II. They both fled the war. Both of them survived. The younger brother ended up settling in Russia, had a son, Alexander, and Alexander discovered that his uncle, Eliyahu, was still alive. And so they coordinated a reunion just earlier this week, And the video is so precious because it shows this just this 102-year-old man in his walker almost running down the hall to his nephew. I mean, his little feet were like, he probably hasn't moved that fast in 30 years. And it was so endearing. And he embraced his nephew and showered him with kisses and was speaking in Russian to him, which is apparently the first time in decades that he's spoken in Russian. Told his nephew that he was a copy of his father. It was just a very, very endearing interview. So that is this week's Off Factor. Our 102-year-old friend Eliyahu, who thought his entire family had been killed in the Holocaust, only to find out 60 years later that he has that not only does he have a surviving nephew, but he had a brother who survived it as well. And unfortunately, he didn't get to reunite with his brother before his brother passed away, but he did get to reunite with his nephew. And he says, "I am overjoyed. This shows it is never too late. People can always find what they're looking for if they try hard enough, and I succeeded."
And where can you find the video?
I can post it on our Facebook page, and you can get teary and verklempt and choked up just as I did and see these two very endearing men reunite after really not even knowing each other existed until recently. But I think just the emotional impact of feeling like your entire family has been dead for 60 years and then realizing that's not the case.
That's not the case. Yeah, there's someone left. There's someone still family. Left.
Yeah, there's a whole family. And then Eliyahu has a whole family himself. So his nephew, Alexander, actually didn't have any family left. And so Eliyahu, who did get married and have a family now, you know, now his nephew, Alexander, has a whole new family.
Luke's Laboratory is next. We'll hear what Luke has to say along with Juan. They'll talk about the latest in adaptive technology, and it'll be interesting to hear who the customer of the week is.
This is a segment of the program where we talk about everything technology, from hardware, software. What are we talking about this week, Luke?
The Seeing AI app. It came out, 6 months ago, somewhere around there, and released by Microsoft. This app was pretty impressive. So the basic idea behind it was a number of different features which would be helpful for a person with a visual impairment, including things like optical character recognition, so you could take a picture of a page and it would read it aloud to you. It had what they call a short text mode, where you could just basically wave your phone camera around in front of some text and it would automatically start reading, so no need to even take a picture, it would just automatically start reading to you. They had a facial recognition, where you could take a picture of a person, you could tell the phone who the person was, and then it would remember who they were and be able to tell you. It could also take a picture of people and guesstimate their age and the expression that they were wearing. And then environmental recognition. And so you could take a picture of a room, and it would try to tell you something useful about the room. It is a really cool app. I believe it's still only available on Apple devices, so iPhone in particular, I think. But they just announced an update, and it's pretty incredible. I don't know if I noted that this app is free, so if anybody has any interest in any of these things, then please go and go into the App Store and download it. It's totally free, and it's not difficult to use. Now, some of these new features I'm going to tell you about. There's one in particular which I'm really excited about. So the first new feature is color recognition. You can get apps that do this already, so this isn't necessarily anything groundbreaking, but the nice thing about it, being in Seeing AI, is Microsoft is starting to have this app where it's one app that does everything. So you can clean up your home screen, you can just have one app that you can go to do all of these different things that you might need to do on a daily basis. So color recognition, I've heard it's accurate. I have to admit, I haven't had a chance to try it, but I've heard it's accurate. We have currency recognition. So now if you want to know that you're getting the correct change when you go out shopping, you can open up your app and just wave a bill in front of it, and it's going to tell you the denomination of the bill. Next new feature, musical light detector. Let's say you go into a room and you don't know if the lights are on, right? You can basically wave your phone around now, and the higher the pitch of the noise it makes, so it'll beep, and the higher the pitch of the beep, then the brighter it is. Okay, this next one is the one that I'm super excited about. Handwriting recognition. All right, check this out. Like, as far as I know, there isn't anything that does this at the moment. And this is something that people really want because, you know, okay, you have OCR
and it can take a picture of printed text and read it to you, and that's great. But what if somebody handwrites you a letter, or, you know, it's the holiday season, what if somebody handwrites a card and sends it to you? Mm-hmm. And, you know, what are you going to do if somebody isn't available to read it to you? Then, you know, you're not going to have any idea what it says. Handwriting recognition, this is incredible. I've used it. I used it a couple of nights ago. Did some Christmas cards, and it was surprisingly accurate. Like, I was shocked at how good it was. Now, obviously, this is going to depend somewhat on the quality of the handwriting, you know. So if the handwriting is particularly poor, well, you're not going to get great results. But in general, it seems to be doing a wonderful job, and it's only going to get better from here. So super impressed with that. I'm really happy that that's a feature.
All right. And for more information and for information on technology and...
So you can call me 312-997-3649. That's my direct line. You can email me Luke, L-U-K-E, .Scriven, S-C-R-I-V-E-N, at chicagolighthouse.org.
All right, that does it for this week's edition of Luke's Laboratory. Right here on The Beacon, I'm Juan Suarez.
That wraps up our Christmas Eve show. Not really anything to do with Christmas, but I like saying it. So
Christmas
there it is.
Eve.
Christmas Eve Eve.
Okay.
Many thanks to Jenna Schlick, who, you know, we wouldn't be here without her. So we're very, very grateful and very thankful for all she does for us. And many thanks to you, our listeners, because clearly we wouldn't be here without you either. So I hope you all have a safe and wonderful holiday. And we will be back here, same time, same place. Have a great week.